Hello and welcome to the Rick Z Show. I'm your host, Rick Z, and this is my podcast. This is The Maiden Voyage. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to speak about a lot of different musical topics over the weeks and months and years. Who knows how long it'll last. But for this very first one, we're going to have my very good friend, Rusty Johnson, do a little quick interview of me so the listeners know exactly who I am and what I'm all about. Rusty?
Rick, how's it going today?
Great. I'm excited. I've never done anything like this, but I love music and I got a lot to say.
This is going to be groundbreaking, I know it. But really, you know, I think what most of the listeners are going to want to know is that kind of what is going to be your primary focus for the podcast?
Well, I think it's two things. One is I'd like to talk about different topics of music and have guests on. You know, maybe one week will be doo-wop, one week will be jazz, one week will be blues, one week will be country music, expressing all my different musical loves. I'd like to also shed a spotlight on some giants in their field that aren't exactly household names that deserve a second look. Also, another thing I'd like to do is expose some musicians in this area, put a little spotlight on them, because there's some great ones in the Hudson Valley here where I live, and chat with them for a while.
Now, as you mentioned, we have a lot of fantastic musicians around here in the Hudson Valley. But one thing I noticed about growing up in the Hudson Valley, like we've done, is that even though this place is full of fantastic musicians, it seems that the music scene in the Hudson Valley kind of sucks.
Well, you know, it depends on how you look at it. On one hand, I've been a musician in the Hudson Valley for 30 years, and I've always heard over the years about the fantastic, burgeoning music scene of the Hudson Valley, and personally, I've never seen it. You know, if you're not in a country band or a cover band, you can't get any attention around here. And there's not even a lot of places anymore to play. The Valley has changed so much over the years. There was a little bit of an original music scene in the early 90s. It lasted maybe 3 or 4 years, and then it was over. But what's intriguing to me about the Hudson Valley, and why it's such a beautiful musical place, is you've got some of the world's greatest session players that live here. I think they live here because New York City is very close by, and this is kind of out of the way, off the beaten path. A lot of these musicians will do gigs from time to time to make some extra money when they're not on tour with big-name artists. So there's an untapped wealth of musicians in this area, and a wealth of great studios, and the access to those musicians for somebody like me is really great to have. I've traveled all over the country playing music, and I've never seen such a wealth of talent as I have here.
What actually got you started into music? Was it a young kid thing, or?
Yeah, when I first started, well, long before then, you know, when I was a young kid, my dad was a really big fan of rock music, and he introduced me to the Beatles and the Beach Boys and the Bee Gees and, you know, all these different bands, and I was fascinated by every single thing I heard. I couldn't get enough. He would come home from work on a Friday night, and he'd have a new album tucked under his arm, and I couldn't wait to just dig in and listen, just see what it was all about. And everything was a new gem, everything that I would discover, and I just absorbed music. And then I tried to, you know, learn to play guitar. I started taking lessons when I was probably too young, about six years old, I guess. And by the time I was 10, I was getting pretty good. By the time I was a teenager, it had become such a huge priority to me. But, you know, I actually wanted to be a film director. That's what I had a passion for. Music was just something that was part of me. I never thought about doing it as a job or anything like that. It wasn't something that ever occurred to me, doing music, you know, try to make a living doing music. I wanted to direct films. I went off to college, and that didn't seem like such a viable option anymore. I needed money. This was a way I knew I could maybe go out and make a little bit of money. And the next thing you know, 30 years have gone by, and this is what I do.
Now, known you for, gosh, what is it, 30 years now?
20, I think.
20 years?
I think I met you in 99, actually, in May of 99, if not to put too fine a point on it, but I think that's when it was. And here it is, 2019, so 20 years.
Wow, 20 years.
Long time.
But one thing I noticed whenever I come into your place is that you have a massive collection of CDs. How many CDs do you have?
I'm almost embarrassed to say because I know. I actually have 1,749 CDs right now.
Now, what a lot of the listeners might not know, but as you're living in town with Rick Z, he's very popular in the area. And still only some people know here, if they go to see him out play or they hang out with him, one thing that they do not realize is that Rick is actually blind. But what really blows my mind is the fact that you can recite every single one of your CDs in alphabetical order.
Yeah, I mean, I could. Part of that is just like compulsive behavior, you know. But some of it is just the necessity of how I live, you know. If I can't write anything down because I'll lose it. And, you know, I've had digital tape recorders, that note takers and things like that. But in general, the easiest way for me to know something is to remember it. So over the years, before there were digital tape recorders and things like that, you know, I would just memorize everything. It just seemed easier. So knowing all my CDs is kind of essential if I want, and they have to be alphabetized, because if I want to find something, I have to know pretty much exactly where it is at all times. Otherwise, it's going to take me, you know, forever to find it.
Here's a follow-up question to that. For that exact fact, I know that you're not only a musician, but you're a songwriter. How many songs do you have memorized that you've written?
That's a great question. I don't really know. I mean, I also don't know how many songs I have. You'd figure I would have memorized that too. But yeah, I probably have over 1,100 songs. That's all I could tell you.
In your brain that you could...
No, just that I've written.
Oh, but now out of the 1,100, how many do you think you could just pick up your guitar and play?
You know, a lot of times I have to sit and learn my own material if I want to, you know, put a few new songs in the set. But at any given time, I could probably play 200 of my songs, something like that.
Out of memory.
Out of memory, yeah. And it's not just memory. I mean, it's also muscle memory,
sure.
You know, because I've played so many of those 200 so many times. I mean, some hundreds, some thousands, and it just sticks to your brain eventually.
Sure. In the intro, I noticed your new intro song. It's the first time I've heard it. Where'd it come from?
Oh, the Rick Z Show theme music?
Yeah, I like it.
Thanks. It has a title, too. It's called Have Hope, Will Travel, but that's not important. Nobody cares about that. I don't even care about that. It was just a title. I was actually helping a friend with putting some music online to license out to movies and TV commercials and stuff, and it was a piece that we composed together. His name's George Mantalone, and we were in his home studio, and we worked on that piece. It was kind of an experiment for me to try to play different instruments, a little keyboard, do some drum programming.
So you did all the music on that, all the instruments?
I did all the music, except he plays guitar. I play guitar on it, but he also plays a little guitar on it as well. So I have to give him credit for that. He co-wrote it with me, and we produced it together right in his studio.
Very cool. Now, one thing I've noticed of knowing you through the years is that you have a very eclectic interest in music. But as far as you being a singer-songwriter, how would you describe to someone, you know, what you are?
And what style my music is?
Your style and your process, per se.
Well, I do have an eclectic taste in music, and that's... I like that to be reflected in the music that I write, because I have so many different loves... that I want to try to emulate a lot of different things. I want my music to have that kind of range. You know, I want to make a bluegrass album, and then I want to make a children's album, and then I want to make a rock album, and then maybe...
Gangster rap.
Maybe some gangster rap. You never know. I would love to make some gangster rap. I'm not sure I know what that is, but no. I know what that is, and I don't want to make it, but all due respect to all you gangster rap fans out there. But yeah, I've got a wide range of tastes, and when somebody asks what style of music I play, I usually get around it by saying, you know, all different styles, or it just depends on the day, depends on the gig. You know, in my business, if you want to make money, you have to do what's called for. So if somebody wants you to play this or that, you should have some stuff in your back pocket to play live. Sometimes country, sometimes blues, maybe rock or acoustic folk or whatever.
Because we've jammed together. I'd sit in on some of your shows and watch your shows countless times. And I could see a lot of kind of folky stuff, but a lot of rock as well. But also, isn't there a certain time of year you go down south and become a country guy, right?
Yeah, I used to go down to Nashville. I haven't done that in a few years, but very consistently for many years, I'd go down to Nashville at least once a year. And you kind of have to be a country guy down there. And I don't want that to be what I do permanently, but I love that music so much that, you know, I was motivated to, you know, kind of pretend I was a country singer, at least while I was down there. And I found that I really enjoyed performing country music. You know, it would influence my sets when I'd come back up here.
Well, you must have been good at it, because you can't fake being country in Nashville. They'll catch you every time.
Well, the thing about Nashville is, you know, I was so scared the first time I went down there, because they got the greatest guitar players and the greatest singers on earth, and I am neither. You know, I can hold my own, but I'm not a Nashville singer. I'm not a Nashville guitar player. But what I didn't anticipate is how much they prize the song. You know, you've got Music Row down there, and songwriting is a really big part of Nashville. If you're a songwriter and you come into town, you're almost automatically respected, because not everybody is a songwriter. There's tons and tons of musicians, but songwriters are kind of few and far between. So if you're a songwriter, that's a commodity in Nashville. And I felt, when I came home, I felt, you know what, I held my own down there because I have songs, you know, and you know, I may not be the greatest singer or guitar player in the world, but I can maybe, you know, pave a way with my songwriting.
Do you feel that Nashville kind of is an island itself, being that they like the songwriter? You know, I know at least around here in the Hudson Valley, a lot of times people go out and they want to hear cover bands as opposed to singer-songwriters. You believe that, you know, down in Nashville, that's much more appreciated than here?
Oh, definitely. Definitely original music is more appreciated. You know, for one thing, it's a big city. I live in a small town. The Hudson Valley, more or less, is a small town. Nashville is where you go to play music for people that are looking for that. They're looking right. But you know what? You see your share of cover bands down there, as well as original artists. I would say the original artists are still fewer and further between than the cover bands. I think that's true anywhere you go. But they do appreciate original music more. They'll listen to that. People will go out and look for that.
All right. Well, since this is a music show, let's talk some music.
Go figure.
Yeah. How do you want to open it up now?
Well, you know, one of the things about the show that appealed to me is to be able to, you know, talk about the many sides of music that I love. I guess I'll tell you a little bit about how I acquired that love. You know, nowadays with the internet, access to music is so easy to get. When I was a kid, it wasn't like that. You had to have a strong interest in music, and you had to go after stuff. You had to go to record stores. You had to look through things. You had to ask people what they listened to. You had to try a wide range of radio stations, and you couldn't just grab a song out of the air like you can today online or something. Yeah, it took a while to find it. But I was so driven to do it. You know, when I was a little kid, the Beatles, the Beach Boys, you know, Roy Orbison, doo-wop music, things like that, things that my dad listened to around the house and that he liked, I gravitated to. But then as I started to learn more and listen to more stuff on my own and buy my own records, start a record collection, I started to, you know, kind of venture out of that and move on to some other type of things. For example, I almost exclusively listened to pop music until I was 12. Then I discovered Elvis Costello around the age of maybe 14 or 15, and I thought, wow, this isn't pretty music. It doesn't sound perfect. And I saw the value in that. I thought, wow, well, it's kind of punkish, yet it's intelligent. He had lyrics that I just thought were unbelievable. I never heard anything like that. You didn't hear that kind of stuff on pop radio. So I started to change my thinking, and records became the way I learned about music and not the radio. When I was real little, it was just the radio. But once I discovered records, that was a whole new ballgame. And then cassette tapes and 8-tracks, I went through all those phases. And eventually, by the time I was maybe 20 years old, I hadn't exactly exhausted my enthusiasm for the music I'd grown up with, but just wasn't challenging my ear anymore like it once did. I just heard all that stuff so many times, classic rock and pop music, 80s pop and all this stuff. And eventually I thought, let me look at some of these other realms of music, like jazz was the first that I took some interest in. And, you know, I started listening to jazz. I went easy. I started with Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington, and that stuff was pretty accessible. And then very slowly, as you get your feet wet, you start to move into some jazz music that's not so simple to understand. The more you listen to it, the more you can appreciate it, and the more you learn about the jazz scales, the more you see what they're doing and have a new appreciation for it. And then I started to get into guys like John Coltrane and Miles Davis and some of the heavier stuff. And one of the reasons it appealed to me to do a podcast is there's so many guys that in jazz, men and women, that are completely unappreciated. And these people, I mean, outside the jazz field, they're unappreciated, but in jazz, they're giants. People like Bud Powell and Jack Teagarden and one of my all-time favorites, Lester Young, and Ben Webster, and I mean, the list goes on and on. It boggles my mind how many greats there are. I just listed just a mere few of them, but there's literally hundreds of incredible artists. I won't be able to talk about them all on this show, but, you know, I want to talk about the ones that have had an impact on me. Every genre has that same thing, giants of the field. You know, in blues, you got Lightnin' Hopkins, and you got Howlin' Wolf, and John Lee Hooker, and those are relatively big names, but not everybody knows Freddie King and Albert King and Albert Collins, and the list is endless. And this goes for country or classical or any kind of music. So I'd like to, you know, shed a little light on that, and maybe someone will say, hey, that sounds interesting. I'm going to go online and see if I can look up this person and see what they're like, see what their music's like. And, you know, so I'm just doing my little part to spread the word.
Now, at this point of your life, if you could choose just one musician to jam with and co-write a song with, who would it be and why?
Wow. That's a loaded question. There's so many. I don't know if I can narrow it down to one, but I always loved songwriters. I was always fascinated from a young child listening to the radio thinking, how did that song just come into being? You know, like, how did it? It didn't just materialize. Somebody had to write that. How do you do that? That was a strong fascination really early. I didn't see any of my friends really caring so much about that. They may like the music, but they didn't really think so much about what was behind it. My rock stars were songwriters. You know, I loved Paul McCartney. I loved Billy Joel and James Taylor and Phil Collins and Elton John and Hendrix. And, you know, I loved rock stars, don't get me wrong. But in a way, songwriters were my rock stars, you know. And as I grew more and more of an appreciation for other songwriters, I just became more and more fascinated by them. Carole King and Bob Dylan and Kris Kristofferson was always one of my favorites, and so was Jimmy Webb and Stephen Bishop. And, you know, they were all different. They all had different levels of sophistication and different attributes. Paul Simon always amazed me. And then later, I grew appreciation for some of the standards and some of the guys that wrote those brilliant songs, like Cole Porter and Johnny Mercer and Harold Arlen and Jerome Kern, and that list goes on and on and on. And there's tons of those that people don't know. And songwriters are various and plentiful. So I'm not sure I could choose one. I mean, if Kris Kristofferson wanted to write a song with me, fine. I would try not to be intimidated. I'd try to be professional, but it would not be easy to do. You know, to some degree, you want to emulate your heroes, and to another degree, you want to separate yourself from them so you're not compared too much to them. You know, you want to be seen as having your own sound. But I would write with any of those guys. Hey, if Billy Joel wanted to, you know, write a hit song with me, I would say, you do most of the heavy lifting, Billy, and I'll try to keep up.
More triangle. Or,
I'll play the triangle. Hopefully it'll inspire you and you'll write something great.
Now for the next podcast, what do you feel you're going to hit upon? Specific musician or type of music? Or?
Yeah, you know, what I'd like to do is every other week I'd like to have a guest on here, a musician, a wide range of ages and people. I'd like to talk about what they do because I'm fascinated with other musicians. I love to hear about how other people write songs. You know, Billy Joel said in an interview one time that his songwriting comes from abstract shapes and colors that he dreams. And he wakes up and he sits at the piano and he turns them into music. I can't relate to that at all. That means nothing to me. Jackson Browne, he said, you know, the hardest thing about being a songwriter is finding material worth writing about. Trying to find something that he cares enough about to write. And I get that. That I can relate to. And then you have guys like Elton John that don't write any of their own lyrics, and somebody hands him a lyric sheet, in his case, his writing partner, Bernie Taupin, and he just sits down and puts it to music. I can't do that. If somebody handed me lyrics and I had to put that to music, I have done that once or twice, but they don't come out as great songs, I don't think. Not for me. They might be okay, but I'm more comfortable actually writing the music and then plugging the lyrics in last. That's my style, but they're all so different. So I like to hear about everybody and what they do, and I'm really looking forward to interviewing some of these people and just kind of finding out what makes them tick as musicians and kind of getting inside their head a bit. I'd like to do a half-hour podcast, 30 minutes. Some weeks it's going to be 40 minutes, 45 minutes maybe, 25 minutes. I'd like it to be natural, though. I don't want to force anything, so however long it takes, it takes. You know, I don't want to have to sit here and try to come up with things to say. Just a nice, casual, organic conversation about music. I'm really excited about getting started.
All right, so I feel this is a fantastic maiden voyage, and we're going to be coming back every week. I'll mostly be behind the scenes, capturing all these wonderful musicians and conversation. I'd like to thank everybody for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening, and come back and listen some more. We're going to have lots of great stuff. Can't wait to dig in. Thank you, Rusty, for being my interviewer today. Always great to see you.
No problem. Matter of fact, knowing you 20 years, I can honestly say you're one of the most interesting people I know. That not only about music, but he actually could put a podcast on about outer space and astrophysics, but this is probably more entertaining, right?
That's a whole different podcast. And right back at you, by the way, you're a great musician yourself, and maybe one day I'll have you on the show as well.
Sure.
So you'll be back. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you soon.